Orlando and Sandy is brought to you on demand thanks to SCL Mortgage, the home of MySpecialMortgage.com.
It's Orlando and Sandy, presented by SCL Mortgage. Here's the great Sandy Clough and Denver Broncos all-decade right tackle Orlando Franklin.
Well, here we are at 10:01 on Denver Sports Station. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, Sandy Clough, Nate Jackson sitting in for Orlando. Orlando will be around for our hockey war room tomorrow morning at 10:30. Mike Evans will host, and the panelists will include yours truly, Orlando, Scott Masters, and Adrian Dater of Colorado Hockey Now. So we look forward to that. We may or may not know the identity of the Avalanche opponent in round number two by tomorrow morning. Nonetheless, we will proceed. And right now, we bring in for his monthly visit, we call him the good doctor, roughly once a month, or in times of great need, one or the other. It's always good to have Dr. Perea join us from Think One, the preeminent performance psychologist. And before we get started, I want to ask you about that, because you've been referred to as a sports psychologist, performance psychologist. Which is the better label? Is it, in fact, performance psychologist? Because that sometimes transcends sports.
Absolutely. Good morning, Sandy. Great to be with you. Yeah, performance psychologist is the most accurate description, and here's why. The brain doesn't know the difference between playing football or sitting at a computer doing an essay. The mind does, but the brain does not. All the brain knows is what it feels from the autonomic and central nervous system. So it's really not, when even the people who call themselves sports psychologists, they're limiting themselves to a field. But the brain, central nervous system, autonomic nervous system, they don't know the difference. All they know is arousal and calm. And so I'm a performance psychologist, because I don't just help athletes. I help CEOs, surgeons, astronauts, everyday people, moms and dads, adolescent athletes. So it's more about treating symptoms other than titles. So that's why performance psychologist is the most accurate description.
All right. Now that we've got that out of the way, what do you think all this hullabaloo around Aaron Rodgers coming to Denver?
I think it's comical. I really do. I just think that, you know, there's such a carousel in the NFL. And, you know, for the listeners out there, I've worked with several teams in the league over the years, been in their buildings, had my office in their buildings, been privy to a lot of information. And, you know, one thing I want people to understand, and I don't say this from an ego perspective, but just from an accurate perspective, you know, a performance psychologist, sports psychologist, or a clinical psychologist that's in a building of a pro team, they are privy to information that very few other people are. Players will tell us things that they won't tell a coach, that they won't tell a teammate, because they're fearful of being judged. So we have a lot of information. So, you know, to understand what's going on in that building in Green Bay, I'd love to be a fly on the wall, because what you're getting from Aaron, what you're getting from front office, the coaches, is probably about 30% of the truth. And there's somewhere in between that would be the most accurate. But I do know this, there's a lot of egos in the NFL. And you know what, Sandy? Most of them exist in the front office. Most players are pretty grounded kids. They really are. That's been my experience, is they tend to be the most grounded people in the building. The front office people, sometimes coaches, can really, you know, get full of themselves and be egocentric in many ways and drive, you know, their vision and mission in a way that doesn't always sit well with the players.
Doc, this is Nate Jackson. I'm filling in for Orlando.
Nate, what's going on, my friend?
How are you, man? It's good to be talking with you. I've listened to you before on this show, and I'm excited to be talking with you, because I played with the Broncos from 2003 to 2008, and one of my most actually enjoyable parts of the season were phase one and phase two of the OTAs. When you get to get back with the guys, there aren't a lot of coaches around. You're not sitting in meetings all day. You're working out together. You're hanging out in the locker room. You're eating together. You might go golf together after you work out. But these days, the OTAs are a phase that the NFL Players Union is trying to phase out. They don't want to be around. They're worried about risking injury. What are your thoughts about team building and the value of this early time together? Do you think it's important as far as getting on the same page and becoming closer, or do you think that it's not a big deal?
Well, I think from a social cohesion part aspect, it is important to be around each other, you know, bond with each other. You know, social cohesion is the highest level of performance. There's task cohesion, which means everyone does their job, and then there's social. So I think it is important from that aspect. But I do hear you when we talk about injuries. I've seen the repetitive injuries that happened in the spring in the last several years. And I do think there is too much repetitive movements that are going on from OTAs into training camp and then into the fall. That worries me more than anything, the neck down. The neck up, I think it's a great opportunity. Unfortunately, Nate, as you know, there's not enough teams in the league that really understand the neck up, the mental side of the game. You know, they'll have a mental skills coach. They may have a psychologist on staff or a wellness coordinator. But that person doesn't always understand how to deliver the content. Because as you know, an NFL locker room is different, man. It's not the average person on the street. And you got to have an entry point that these guys understand. So what I would love to see, Nate, is in the spring that there's a neck up emphasis, if you will. There's a lot of cohesion built. There's a lot of mental awareness built, mental enhancement. And then the physical part comes in training camp in the fall. Because I think with what teams are doing, they're doing a lot of repetitive movements and drills and things like that that, you know, is very hard physiologically on players. So I think if we were to divide it up in a real wellness program, we'd focus in the spring, the neck up, and then from then on, neck down.
I want to ask you about a couple of Broncos who got hurt working out off site. Juwan James, you know well from your time in Miami. You were there at the basically beginning or close to the beginning of Juwan James' career. He gets injured. He's working out on his own. He's subsequently been waived. Same thing happened to Deshaun Hamilton, the wide receiver. Now, this week we hear Melvin Gordon saying that he will be there for the mandatory mini camp in June. But Melvin Gordon saying, I've got my own personal people. I've got my own workout regimen. I'm not going to be there for the voluntary part. I don't know that if he got hurt, the Broncos would waive him too. But you've seen it happen to a couple of guys. This is an ongoing battle between the NFL and the NFLPA. And the player is seemingly kind of caught in the middle, right? Because his union is telling him you don't have to be there, but then the guy gets hurt and he gets cut. There's not much the union can do at that point. And even had Juwan, I guess, put out on social media at some point, hey, they gave me the advice, they should have my back, speaking of the union.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Sandy, when you have me on your show, it's a golden opportunity for me to teach psychology and how psychology forms a nexus with performance and
right.
football
right.
specifically. But let me tell you what's going on here. There's two constructs we look at in psychology, and it's called individualism and collectivism. Individualism means you're a me person. Collectivism means we're a we person. And different cultures tend to have different tendencies. You know, ethnic cultures have different tendencies. You'll notice that some cultures are very individualistic. They're about their own individual, you know, performance and entitlement. And then other cultures are really together. They live, you know, multiple generations will live in one home, and they're very collective. Well, guess what? It's happening in the leagues as well. And what we tend to evolve to is we've become very individualistic in our professional leagues. And unfortunately, that doesn't bode well for a team. When you got an agent, a union that's telling you, no, you don't have to report, you can use your own people, you know, players are going to listen to that. But that conflicts with the old model of, you know, let's report together, let's work together, let's be together, let's form a nexus together. So there's some, you know, constructs that are coming into conflict with each other, and that's individualism and collectivism. And those two constructs, really, we delineate in the general culture and general public. And I wish more people would understand how to get their team to a level of collectivism, because when you do things collectively as a team, those are the teams that win Super Bowls. As you know, Sandy, and I think you know too, Nate, I was with the team in 15-16 when we won the Super Bowl in February of 16. We didn't have the best team in the NFL. When I went to Miami the next year, I'm sitting there watching the team in training camp saying, holy cow, we're loaded in Miami. Probably had more talent, you know, position by position. But that Denver team had a cohesive element to it, not only on offense, but especially on defense. And so I would say that, you know, the league just needs to understand how to build collectivism within the culture of each team. And you know what, Sandy and Nate, it starts at the top. It starts at the top with the commissioner, with the owners, and then it trickles down into the EVPs, the GMs. We've got to do a better job in the league of understanding how that will help teams be together and perform better.
I think I want to dig into a little bit more what you're talking about, the training the neck up. And I think you touched on it just now a little bit, the individual versus the collective. But if you were running the program and you just said, hey, the phase one and phase two should be less about the physical and more about the mental side, how do you build up that mental side? How do you prepare the football mind and the football team to go out there and perform at a high level?
Great question. So what we do, you know who Tony Robbins is. Let me give you a comparison. Tony Robbins is this great motivator. He teaches people how to get excited. But one thing that Tony doesn't do, and Tony's my brother, so if you're listening out there, I still love you, bro. But here's what happens. Tony doesn't bring the science. What we need to explain to players is a simple science. It sounds really scientific, but if they understand it, if they just understand three parts of the brain, neuroplasticity, neurogenesis, and neuropruning. Neuroplasticity means the brain can generate new thinking pathways. So if a player has been negative in the past or they think in a deficit way, we can retrain and create new pathways. That's neurogenesis. And then help them understand, Nate, the autonomic nervous system. It is the birthplace of stress and anxiety, and it's the place where we can reach flow or in the zone. And if you teach them those two aspects about the brain and the autonomic nervous system, literally get on a board and show them how this works and say, hey, when you're in an argument with your girlfriend, with your wife, what side are you on? You're on the sympathetic. Hey, when you're in free flow and you're playing great and you just don't have a care in the world, you're on the parasympathetic. Educate them, help them understand how their brain operates, because the brain is different than the mind. And most NFL coaches couldn't even tell you the difference between the brain and the mind. And that's not good. Because if as you know, Nate, if we're going to spend umpteen hours training these guys, training these players, scheme, plays, all this stuff, stance, alignment, everything, and we're not going to at least understand a little bit about the brain, a little bit about the autonomic nervous system where stress and anxiety are born, then we're really doing a disservice to the players and to the team. Because I'll tell you what, the teams that decide to really delve into this, and let me give you an example of the teams that do. There's something really in common with them. Alabama football, New England, Pete Carroll, all those teams right there I just named really put an emphasis on the neck up. So you can see what happens when we do that. And we got to get better at that, Nate. And then let me just finish by saying this. Us in the mental health psychological realm, we got to get better, because you know what? Too often we send in mental health people that don't know how to connect with these players. And you know what? They'll sniff out a rat in a heartbeat. And if they don't connect with you, they're not going to let you in. So we've also got to have those people skills that help us reach them where they're at, not where we're at. We may be a scholar, we may be a PhD, but you know what? When we enter that locker room, we're with them. We're brothers with them, and we got to do a better job at deploying that.
If you were able to connect, let's say, today, with Teddy Bridgewater and then with Drew Lock, competing for the quarterback job here in Denver, would you tell them both the same thing, or would your advice to one be very different from your advice to the other?
Another great question. You guys are amazing. The first thing I do is give them personality assessments. I have a personality assessment that I use at the combine every year that has a validity and external reliability rate of 0.92 up to 1.00. So it's almost a perfect assessment. It will tell us what we call covert behavior, which is thoughts, feelings, and perceptions, which we can't see, and then overt behavior, anger control, anger management. We can see that. And through those personality assessments, Sandy and Nate, I would be able to delineate what approach to have with each other, because it'll tell me how they process stress, anxiety, but it'll also tell me what kind of motor they have. Are they intrinsically driven? Are they extrinsically driven? Internally versus external. That would tell me what approach to have with both of them. So no, I wouldn't have the same discussion with both. I wouldn't have the same protocols and techniques with them both. It would depend on the personality assessment, but it would also depend on data collections, just sitting down with them, talking to them about their high school career, their college career, their relationships, how they really process information. That would determine what direction I would go. But I will tell you this right now. The person that's better prepared from the neck up will win that job. And I will go further than that. The team that's the best prepared from the neck up will win the Super Bowl this coming fall.
So successful athletes need to be able to block out the noise. The man in the arena cannot be, in my opinion, thinking about the opinions of everyone outside of the arena. Now, the modern media landscape is a lot different from when I played. There was no social media. We didn't have the opinions of everybody coming into our sphere. What are your thoughts about professional athletes and social media these days?
I think it's just not only professional athletes, Nate, but just our adolescents and young blood growing up. I think it is literally destroying our ability to focus and concentrate and reach high levels of performance like we have before. You know, when you talk about blocking out the noise, we have a real simple protocol. We have relevant cues versus irrelevant cues. And when you teach someone to focus on relevant cues, it automatically blocks out irrelevant cues. You know, I have three sons, 17, 15, and 13, and I got to tell you, sometimes they're on their phone too much, and I'll go up in their room, and I say, look, the longer you're on that phone, it's taking you away from reading that book. The longer you're on that phone, it's taking you away from connecting with your friends. The longer you're on that phone, it's taking you away from some level of performance somewhere else. So we've got to understand how social media is impacting the locker room. You know, I've been in NFL locker rooms. We're ready to walk out for after warm-up, come back in, and we're ready to walk out for the kickoff, and we got guys texting people. I'm like, no, the culture can't be like that. Now, you may say, oh, we can't run an NFL team like that. I've seen it done. Phones are away once you report pregame, and I'll tell you what, it makes a difference. So we've got to do a better job, Nate, at understanding the impact on social media and athletic performance.
We're talking to Dr. Rick Perea, and Dr. Perea, before we let you go, I want to make mention, first, of Think One, and secondly, of a little work you'll be doing for us starting very soon on a weekly basis, as I understand it.
Yes, sir. It's going to be twice a month, Sandy. I'm going to do an article for the website at 104.3 The Fan. It's going to be called Mental Mondays.
All right.
So
love it.
Every other Monday, we're going to have a Mental Monday. We're going to get ourselves in the right spot emotionally, psychologically for the week so we can go out there and be everything we're meant to be. Imagine this, Sandy and Nate. Most of us Americans put 30% of ourselves and compartmentalize it. We put it away due to fear, due to anger, due to frustration. We've got to be 100% of ourselves. Imagine watching a player perform to 70% of his potential. It's heartbreaking. But guess what? We do it every day as accountants, as lawyers, as doctors, as janitors. We're 70% of who we're supposed to be. Don't shortchange yourself, people. Let's get together. Let's have a Mental Monday. Let's get you in the right spot so you can do and be everything you're meant to be.
All right, bi-weekly. We look forward to that on DenverFan.com coming up very soon. And just wanted to say to Nate, you know, Rick was talking about his 17-year-old, his 15-year-old, who just had a birthday the other day. Congratulations. And his 13-year-old. This sounds very familiar, like advice he's given to a certain 63-year-old in the studio. We won't mention which one of us is 63, of course, but you can draw your own conclusions. That advice sounded very familiar to me, what the answer you just gave a few minutes ago. Dr. Perea, love you, man. It's always a pleasure.
Hey, guys, love you guys. Remember this, everybody out there, love is the answer. Love you guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, there he goes, Dr. Rick Perea. Think One, and you can Google it. It was surrounded by authors. Rick just put out a book. Nate's written two books, surrounded by authors once again here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. When we come back, we'll be doing a little bit of this or that, and it will be Bronco Phase 3 related. That's next.
It's time for...
Yo, you can get with this, or you can get with that.
Orlando and Sandy's This or That. Here's the great Sandy Clough and Denver Broncos all-decade tackle, Orlando Franklin.
All right, we just heard from the good Dr. Rick Perea, and my question is a very basic one to Nate Jackson. Are we tired or are we still invigorated by the ongoing Aaron Rodgers saga? And does there come a point where the Broncos have to say, presumably sometime after June 1st, maybe even between June 1st and the start of training camp, hey, he's going to be here or he's not going to be here. And maybe by training camp, do we have to know? Or if you work a trade 5 minutes before the first game, is that okay too? He just walks in and plays and he's probably better than anybody else you could play.
I think it's approaching the point that it's becoming too tiring.
Yeah.
And also becomes a distraction for your football team. The scenario you just presented, you know, right before the first game or a couple weeks into it, you can count me out of that. I don't think that's good for this team. I think the season would be shot. I think everybody's head would be spinning. I don't think that's good for this ball club. The beginning of training camp is even also kind of cutting it close. But, you know, I think we could work with that as long as he gets here at the same time everybody else does, you know, walks into the building with everyone else. But look, I mean, these guys right now have to prepare like he's not going to be here.
Absolutely.
Every single person in that building, they can't even mention Aaron Rodgers' name. And I would really, I would not be surprised if they work it out in Green Bay. I know, you know, Mark doesn't think they're going to. Most people, a lot of people think it's done there.
Yes.
But the fact that he says, I love the players, I love the coaches, I love the city, I love the organization, it's really only one guy makes me feel like, well, maybe there's a chance. Because if you love everyone else, but you're willing to leave all these people you love
for one guy,
is it really, are you really going to leave?
I'm reminded of the philosophy that once was stated by a rather well-known talk show host, kind of a life philosophy. He said, you're making a decision, an employment decision, whether you stay or whether you go. And, you know, you do your old Yale legal pad deal where you write the pros on one side and the cons on the other. And he said, and it applies to Aaron Rodgers and what you just said, said if your list of pros is fairly long and your list of cons, in other words, your reason for leaving, list of pros, so all the things that Aaron Rodgers talks about that he loves. Okay, yeah. Pretty long list.
Yeah.
Your list of cons, why I'm going to leave, they're offering more money at the other place. He said, if money is the only reason you're leaving, vis-a-vis all the reasons for staying, but you're getting more money at the other place, it almost never works out well if you decide to leave just for the money. And in this case, with Aaron Rodgers, you seem to be saying, if the only reason you want to leave is Brian Gutekunst, and there's a long list of reasons to stay, your love for every aspect of the organization, its history, and your career in Green Bay, don't you want to play one of those few players who gets to play his entire career with one team? Doesn't that mean something to you?
Yeah.
You're going to leave just because of one guy.
Yeah.
One guy. It's probably the wrong move. So I agree with what you're saying. And, yeah, story, I don't know what new there is to add. I mean, we talk about it on a daily basis because it's the question we all get on the street. You know, I'm walking my dog the other day. Neighbor drives by and says, thumbs up or thumbs down on Aaron Rodgers. And I just shrugged. I said, hell if I know. So what do you got?
All right, this is real simple. Do you start Teddy Bridgewater or Drew Locke?
I listened very intently to what Dr. Perea had to say. And, of course, I would be incapable of doing a competent personality assessment of both. I don't know either man that well. But I know we did our fan film room comparing for 5 days games played last year against the same opponent by both Bridgewater and Locke. And for 4 of the 5 days, I liked Bridgewater by a lot. The only day I liked Locke more than Bridgewater was the day we spent analyzing the Denver-Carolina game, in which Locke had a passer rating of 149 point something, almost pitched a perfect game. Fumbled once, they ran it back to set up a touchdown, but he didn't throw a pick. He threw 4 touchdown passes. He got better as the game went on. But that was 1 day out of 5. And I just think that Bridgewater, for a variety of reasons, purely on a transitional basis, is your quarterback for 2021. And not any longer. You've still got to find your quarterback of the future. Some people say 18 starts for Locke isn't enough to make a definitive judgment. But I'm looking at the last 9 quarterbacks, including Locke, that the Broncos have had since Peyton retired. And the only guy to start more than 18 games is Trevor Siemian. And my recollection was that long before he started his 24th game, people had decided around here that Trevor Siemian wasn't the answer. It didn't take 24 starts to reach that conclusion. It didn't even take 18 starts. Locke has had as many starts as everybody else, more than most, with the exception of Siemian. I've reached my conclusion. I'll be glad to admit if I'm wrong about this, but I think for 2021, not the long term, because I don't think either guy's long-term answer, but for 2021, if I'm Vic Fangio and I'm coaching for my job, I want the steadier guy. And the guy who last year I thought had a pretty good year playing without maybe the best all-around offensive player in football, Christian McCaffrey, for 13 games out of 16. I'll take him.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. Prior to a couple days ago, I was on board with Drew Locke until actually I heard Teddy speak. And he just seems to have a command of what he's dealing with in a way that obviously Drew Locke doesn't. And when you are the quarterback, people are looking to you as a leader. You know, you don't want to be anyone you're not. And I like Melvin Gordon said, hey, you got to fake it till you make it. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. You got to be yourself. But
absolutely,
whoever you are,
absolutely,
is going to either inspire or not inspire those around you. Everyone likes Drew Locke. Everyone thinks he's a good guy. He has a lot of talent. They respect the work he's putting in. But does he calm them down? Does he focus them? Does he give them perspective in the way that Teddy Bridgewater does? I don't know. I mean, he's learned from Peyton. He spent 10 hours with him watching film. So that's going to make a dent. And he's going to be around Teddy. So he's going to rub off on him. But it really will be very interesting to see what happens, because I do think Drew Locke is the physically more gifted quarterback. But
Younger,
exactly.
Less damaged physically. I mean, that was a horrific injury that Bridgewater had. And Bridgewater can still move around, but he ain't the player. I saw him. He played against the Broncos in 2015. He's a different quarterback now, much more cautious.
Yeah.
I thought he was the most dangerous player on the field that day. The Broncos won the game with their great defense, but he stood out to me on that day.
And you know what? There's a real good chance that in 2021, both of these men can start for the Broncos at some point in the season.
Well,
they might
19
need them both.
Out of 32 teams started more than one guy last year.
Right. So they're probably going to need them both in one way or the other. Well, I mean, of course, we don't want that. We'd like one guy to start all 17 games into the playoffs and,
right,
you know, develop some cohesion and some rhythm.
For you, you got 17.
Taking some training to get there.
It'll take some training. You know, the statement that stood out about Drew Locke for me this offseason, and it was a compliment. paid to Drew Lock by Cortland Sutton. He said, boy, what a change I'm seeing as I rehab, and I'm seeing Drew Lock around. And he's first one here, last to leave. By what a change. Meant it as a compliment. I'm not going to twist his words. But by implication, he's saying last year he wasn't the first in or the last to leave. It might have been closer to the other way around. Last in, first to leave. Your quarterback, as I think Jake Plummer learned in 2006, he can show up for 85 to 90% of the offseason workout schedule. But the head coach, who's just been around Peyton Manning, doesn't want the quarterback being last in attendance, even if last is 88%, let's say. That's still pretty good attendance for voluntary stuff, right?
Yeah.
But he's the quarterback. He's the leader. He should be leading or close to the top in attendance, not at the bottom or near the bottom. And that turned Mike Shanahan off to Jake Plummer. It wasn't anything personal. I mean, as far as I can tell, the two get along today. I've seen them do interviews together. They get along well. There's mutual respect there. But I think that hurt Jake Plummer, and it strikes me that last year, especially with all the follies around that New Orleans game, which was a total debacle. And listen, that was all the quarterbacks. It wasn't just Drew Lock. But Drew Lock was the starter. He should have been the most inclined to adhere to protocols, you know. And the fact that he wasn't bothered me. And Cortland Sutton's statement draws a contrast, and I'm thinking all the stuff we heard was true. He wasn't the hardest worker. He wasn't the most well-prepared last year. Maybe he's turned over a new leaf in this offseason, and maybe that will manifest itself in what we see in training camp, and he wins the job. And if he does so, great for him. But I share some of the same doubt. And you turn me around, because I'm thinking how I would be if I came in here in Teddy Bridgewater's shoes. I'd be saying, I'm the quarterback, I'm the guy, from day one. I wouldn't wait my turn to say something like that. But you convinced me that Teddy Bridgewater, in answering these questions very carefully, very modestly, that's who he is, that's the way to go. Teammates would have more respect for that than they would for a bombastic guy who came in and was taking over the locker room.
Yep.
Or thought he was.
Yep.
So, good stuff on this or that. We will continue, and when we do, we'll be talking about something that Mark Schlereth was getting at, and Mark was out there at the workouts earlier in the week. Can we tell a Hall of Fame player from everybody else right away? In other words, can we look at Patrick Surtain even now and say, this is the real deal? There's a certain future Hall of Famer around here who believes you can make that determination rather quickly. And we'll hear from that player next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Orlando and Sandy.
We've had a lot of interesting conversations this week, and we haven't even gotten to Cecil Lammy yet, but we will now. Cecil Lammy joins us from DenverFan.com, and obviously you can listen to Cecil alongside Nick Ferguson Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. All right, Cecil, we've been discussing this for the better part of the hour so far. Are you tired of the Aaron Rodgers daily update at this point, especially since it is not yet June 1st? I know Rodgers went on TV the other day, so that right. gave us some things to talk about, I guess. But you watched that interview. Did we learn anything from that interview that we didn't already know about the Aaron Rodgers situation? In other words, was clarity provided for you as you watched that interview?
I think we just got to hear it from the horse's mouth, you know, and we had all had the speculations about the front office troubles that Rodgers has had with Green Bay. The clarity on Jordan Love, like when he said those comments about Jordan Love, and I believe Aaron Rodgers, you know, when he says that, he's like, I love Jordan, he's a great kid and all these sorts of things. I've felt so bad for Jordan Love throughout this entire process because, one, he was never ready. Like, not even close. Last year, the Tim Boyle was a backup to Aaron Rodgers.
He never dressed.
He know. And even at the Senior Bowl, where I saw Jordan Love a couple of years ago, Steven Montez looked better than him. You know, Jalen Hurts looked better than him. Like, Jordan Love, mechanically, athletically, lots of things to like. But, man alive, is he rough around the edges. So it was going to take some time. It always was. So to hear Rodgers say that about Love, I think that did provide some more clarity. You know, it's not about Love. It's not about that pick. It's not about Matt LaFleur. We saw coming together the first year with LaFleur, Rodgers kind of fought him a little bit, or there was some headbutting behind the scenes.
Right.
Last year, it was coming together. Okay, what do you want to do? What works? And it was an MVP type of performance. So to get that clarity that it's not LaFleur, it is not Love, it's not his teammates, it's the people at the top, it's the front office, it's Brian Gutekunst, whatever, no one can pronounce his name right. That's the situation. And as far as am I sick of it, Sandy? No, because I'm never sick of dreaming. And I want to dream of a time, because if Aaron Rodgers shows up here, they're a Super Bowl contender right now. They're better than the Chiefs right now. They have a better roster with Aaron Rodgers on their team right now. Now, you could say better coaching, you hat tip to Andy Reid and company. I totally get that. But if we're just talking about player for player, add Aaron Rodgers to the Broncos, and they have a better roster, they have a better starting 22, they have a better team overall than Kansas City. They are Super Bowl contenders, and I will never stop dreaming about that until Green Bay makes Rodgers the highest paid quarterback in the league.
Well, we heard from Cortland Sutton yesterday, Cecil, and he's talking about his mindset going into his rehab. Now, typically in the past, an ACL tear could mean a career-ending injury for a lot of guys, especially guys who rely on downfield speed, fast-cutting. Tell me why you think the best is yet to come for Cortland Sutton.
The best is yet to come for Sutton because it's a contract year. And you know through history, Nate, how guys in contract years, they just ball out. Like, the opportunity is there. And I think I'm writing about this now for DenverFan.com. It'll be out tomorrow. If Sutton is himself again, which he really could be, you know, and medical technology has come so far. Achilles injuries used to be, you know, Dominic Wilkins was never the same after his Achilles.
Exactly.
I know it's basketball, but like back then, Achilles was like, you're just done, dude, and now it's not a big deal. ACL used to be a year and a half, 2 years before a guy was back. Now it's like 9 months. Not everybody's Adrian Peterson, but Cortland Sutton will be back to himself, be back playing at the high level, and I think it's very good for Drew Lock. Drew Lock is what's called a bad ball thrower. Like, he's going to throw some up sometime. It's not really going to be on target, but a guy like Sutton is a bad ball receiver where he's going to bail out his quarterback, basically. Teddy's more precise. He's more of an accurate thrower, better pass placement, better lower body mechanics that lead to better pass placement. But with a guy like Locke, he'll be under duress, throw it up, let the big man go get it. And that's where Sutton can really come through, can really thrive. Speed was never a huge part of his game. He's not Demaryius Thomas fast, in my opinion, but it's that my ball mentality. It's the ability to win contested catches. It's the ability to bail out his quarterback. And Cortland Sutton's always open because there's this window. You guys have seen it. It's blue. It's called the sky. And that thing's always open for the big man. Throw it up. Let him go get it. And I think that can really help out Drew Lock. So many things are setting up in Drew Lock's favor. You know, that if he doesn't win the job and if he doesn't crush it when he has the job, it tells you everything you need to know.
Whether he is where he's on national TV or not, Julio Jones the other day told our good friend Shannon Sharp that he's out of here, as in out of Atlanta. The Broncos not only have quantity in the receiving room right now, they have quality in the receiving room right now. Is there any conceivable way that room could be made for 32-year-old Julio Jones in that room? Would it make any sense for the Broncos to contemplate making a deal for Julio Jones.
Yeah, not to me, really, but Sandy, I kind of want to pick your brain about this because Connor Orr wrote about it from Sports Illustrated.
Kind of what we were referring to yesterday.
And, like, where I have a problem with Albert Breer that I may or may not get into in this interview, like, I don't care. I'll tell everyone the story, but, like, Connor Orr, I know him a little bit. Like, he's a good dude. Like, he's a smart dude. And to suggest the Broncos seems a little odd to me, honestly. I wrote about it in my Mile High Monday for DenverFan.com that he could wind up in the AFC West, not here, but with the Chargers, who have interest.
Right.
And I look at pre-draft interest that was out there. The Raiders, John Gruden would fall all over himself to add Julio Jones. It's kind of what the Raiders do. So I think Chargers, Raiders, Ravens, Colts, all teams with pre-draft interest in Julio Jones, those would be the guys most interested in Julio Jones there as well. And hell, if you're Green Bay, you want to make it up with Aaron Rodgers and have him stay, you could add Julio Jones and probably go a long ways to doing just that. So I don't think so. Never say never in the NFL. But I don't think the Broncos need to make room for Julio. All due respect to him, they're more than fine. And they're going four deep. Timmy Patz is a starter, and he's, you know, barely going to play if the guys in front of him stay healthy.
So what's your beef with Albert Breer?
Well, Nate, you will like this, Nate. He kind of talked a little trash about Zach Bye when we were at the Senior Bowl a few years ago. And I'm like, if you're going to make fun of my man Zach Bye, first off, you're Albert Breer. It's like, well, who are you? But secondly, like, you're going to make fun of my friends. You immediately are on my list, shall we say. So, yeah, I guess as a reporter or as an insider, like, I don't really take any issue with what Albert Breer says or reports. It's not like he's wrong all the time like Jason Lockenfora, but I just look at he was making fun of Zach Bye.
What did he say about Zach?
Zach saw our friend Manish Mehta, who's a, you know, used to be at New York Daily News, dear friend of Zach's, and I think he was out at Veets or something, you know, cold pops flowing, whatever. But, you know, so Zach was like, Manish, my dude. And then Albert's like, Manish, I got a wooden spoon. And, you know, kind of making fun of my boy. And once you do that, because Zach Bye is like one of the coolest dudes at our station, a really nice guy. Like, but once you cross that line with one of my friends, like, nah, I'm writing you off, man.
I don't like Breer either now. Maybe tell that story. I don't know him that well, but I don't like him either. That's the way he acted around our man, Zach. Hey, on a more serious note, the Bradley Chubb situation is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was meant to be delivered this way, but when I heard Vic Fangio the other day talking about more surgery that Bradley Chubb has had, and he'll be out 6 to 8 weeks, and hey, he'll be ready for training camp, but he won't be a part of OTAs. That was kind of a, I won't say it was a bombshell, but it wasn't news I expected to hear, nor was it news we had been told about previously.
Right.
How did that land with you, and do we need to worry about Chubb's fitness coming off a Pro Bowl year, whether you agree with that or not? Do we need to worry about his fitness for 2021 even more than we need to worry about Vaughn Miller's fitness for 2021?
Yeah, and I know the team-friendly outlets will be like, it's no problem, it's nothing to see. I get it. You got to play your role. If you're a team affiliate, you're never going to say anything bad about the team. But I was disappointed when the news came out. I'm like, I'm disappointed because I think Bradley Chubb can be one of the best in the game. I think he can have a 20-sack season. I think he can be that disruptive, that dude. And his 34 pressures last year kind of lead, kind of foretell, Sandy, as you well know, there's certain numbers, you know, turnover differential.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard you talk about for years.
Oh,
there's certain numbers you can look at and say, okay, good things are coming. Really good things are coming.
Right.
Those 34 pressures, well, those are going to turn into sacks. You know, so instead of having 10 sacks or 12 sacks, I mean, he could have 15, 17, 20 sacks. He's that type of guy. And last night I said how I was disappointed with this news. I don't think it's major because it's a minor procedure, so, you know, to be honest. I don't think it is, and he'll be fine, and he'll be ready. Everything's okay, everybody. But I go back, and Nick Ferguson got very angry with me last night because I said, this is still a guy you took over Josh Allen. I don't care if that's fair or not. That's a comparison that's always going to be there. And you decided not to sign Shaq Barrett, who signed such a big one-year, $4 million deal. It's a lot of money to me, not a lot of money in the NFL. But you let Shaq Barrett go, and he didn't sign for anything with Tampa that first year for nothing because you chose Bradley Chubb. So, Chubb, we love you. We support you. We believe in you. Now start producing. Because this team made a couple of decisions that look pretty bad when you use hindsight as 2020.
Well, I want to turn the page a little bit to the tight end room because last year, you know, the Broncos, Noah Fant, obvious passing threat. Alberto, obvious passing threat. They had Nick Vannett, who was a blocker. Troy Fumagalli, kind of a blocker guy. And Jake Butt, sort of a blocker guy. All three of those guys I just mentioned are gone. Who they have is Noah Fant, Alberto. It seems like they're banking on those two guys to be their two tight ends with very little run blocking experience. Are you concerned at all about this tight end room? Are they going to bolster it? How do you see it playing out?
Yeah, it's a huge concern, Nate. And, of course, Nate Jackson brings up the tight end room. But, I mean, it is
why not?
It is such a big concern. I wrote about it a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up. That's right.
Like, could you get a Laquon Treadwell? I mean, if you see what the Dave Gettleman has done with his former first-round draft pick and Kelvin Benjamin, who's now going to play tight end for the Giants, that's interesting. Okay. But Alberto might not be himself until November.
Yes.
X Albert out of tiny Drake University almost ran me over at the Shrine game years ago in practice. I like him as an F guy, but he's bounced around the league. He's okay. You know, he's a guy, whatever. Austin Fort is good, but he's, what, shredded his knee twice? Like, yeah, okay, what can he, and, you know, undrafted in Wyoming, God bless him. I liked him when they picked him up as UDFA, but you're relying on a journeyman in Salbert, two UDFAs, because I forgot Sean Beyer, who didn't, what do you have, like 12 catches? It was like Richard Quinn, but he had 12 catches in his college career because he was a backup to Noah Fant, TJ Hawkinson.
Right.
When he got the chance to be the man, he didn't really do a whole lot. So you've got a couple undrafted guys. You've got a guy that's got a knee injury, won't be as the same until November. You've got a journeyman guy in Salbert. And then you got Noah Fant, who, you know, could be a top five tight end in this league. Honestly, he's that good. So it is a concern. It really is. So, I mean, other options, a trade, you know, will the Broncos be scouring the wire for some tight end help? I think they need to.
Cecil, as always, our thanks. Chock full of information. You got in two knocks for the price of one, by the way. We did catch the Jason Lacroix reference. Boy, you cleaned the table out today.
Well, unless it's with the Ravens or Washington, which is where Luck and Four is around. Like, anytime he reports on the Broncos, like, oh, that's wrong. Like, that's wrong. Like, and it, you know, again, we can tell the truth. Or we can just be like, everybody's fine. No, everybody's not fine. There's some really good people out there that do really hard work and you know, move up the ladder and are friends of ours. And then there's people that just kind of take shortcuts and don't do good work and make fun of Zach Bye. So, you know.
there's one side, then there's the other.
It is media beef, but, like, I don't really care because, no, you know, it's like Breer's going to say anything to me. So it's like, whatever.
Thanks, Cecil.
Be good, fellas.
Thanks, Cecil. Appreciate you, man.
Cecil Lammy, presented by Golden Oak Lending.
Miss any of Orlando and Sandy? Make sure you subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.